Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live in the world, this is David Duke speaking, and we have a lot of interesting, fascinating stuff to talk about today. In a very few short minutes, I'm going to be bringing on Professor Kevin McDonald, one of the intellects and academics I most admire in the world. I've learned so much from his books, A People Shall Dwell Apart, his Culture Critique. We tend to think of races as the three main races, like white, black, and Asian, and there are very, very big gulfs of differences between those races. Smaller differences between Europeans and Asians, but huge differences with some other peoples around the world. But the point is that race is not simply related to the three major races. Race is basically an identifiable gene pool with consistent characteristic genetic markers and certain shared genetic traits. And Dr. McDonald has really been at the cutting edge of the science, showing how that even the Jewish structure of their community, their religion, had a genetic impact, that it sorted out genes for perhaps that accentuated Jewish ethnocentrism, that accentuated certain Jewish characteristic stereotypes, in addition to their particular, what we call the Jewish look. That's just kind of like a bellwether of things that also go on underneath that. Also, the programs over the years that may have an effect even on Jewish looks and Jewish genetics, because the most duplicitous Jewish elements, the ones that were able to escape the programs who looked more European, they were more likely to survive when the angry pitchforked crowds came after them for their criminal behaviors and other behaviors. The ones that were able to seem more like European were able to survive, and that also added to the Jewish stereotype. We know that the Jews are not a pure race in the sense that they have the same exact genetic code from their origins, but we know that Jews, overwhelmingly, both in Europe, whether you talk about Ashkenazi Jews or whether you talk about Sephardic Jews, they have incredible similarity, with DNA testing shows overwhelmingly throughout the world. They have six times more genetic similarity between a Russian Jew and for instance, a Spanish Jew. Then you have between a Russian Jew and a Russian, or a German Jew and a German, or between a Spanish Jew. In other words, a Spanish Jew is more related to an Ashkenazi Jew, which is another division of what's called Jewry, than that. Both of them, though, still have the overwhelming Jewish genotype with a degree of admixture. The Ashkenazi Jew tends to be a little more lighter because there was a degree of intermixture with Germans, with North Germans. That's why many of them look more like Germans. They certainly don't look like some Turco people from whatever the Khazar Empire was, which is basically a nomadic empire. They had no great architecture. They had no great buildings. They had no great anything. They were just a few tribes, and to suggest that these have become the bulk of the Jewish people is really a method that they use to tell us that the Jews aren't a race. Now, I believe very strongly that the Jews are a race. They identify themselves as a race. The Forward magazine has headlines saying Jews are a race. The most mainstream Jewish publication in Israel is, of course, the Jerusalem Post. And the Jerusalem Post did a headline around the world, "We are one. We're one people. We are genetically related. Israel's even using DNA testing." All this, of course, would be impossible except for the fact that the Jews have these common genetic characteristics the world over. And I think it's very important for us to identify the Jews, even more than a tribe, but as a race, because I think that the Jewish media, the Jewish establishment, has basically created racism as one of the greatest evils of the world. And the way they define racism, of course, is hating other peoples, exploiting other peoples, enslaving other peoples, harming other peoples. I think Europeans, in general, don't fit into that category. Europeans have been very happy to be at home in Europe and live in their communities, and most Europeans lived in communities that were all European. They really didn't have this kind of racist bone. They had more of an idea of they were proud of the race and wanted to preserve it and so forth, but they really didn't have this great ethic of everybody in the world is trying to persecute them, and everybody else in the world is enemies of theirs, and that they have this sacred genetic heritage which is of God, and everybody else is not even human beings. I mean, that's the ultimate racism, isn't it? So I think the most powerful way that we have to expose Jews is to expose them as the ultimate racists. That's why I reject the term racist to talk about what our position is, because racism is simply not defined as the idea of wanting to preserve your own people, which I think all people have. Racism is defined by our media as exploitive activities, hateful activities, even genocidal activities against other peoples. And the truth is, the Europeans are probably one of the least egregious violators of that principle. The Jews have always been the chief exploiters of other people, the poisoners of other people, the controllers of other people, the ruler, you know, this tiny minority is wanting supremacy in media, wanting supremacy in banking, wanting to have influence over the political structure. This is based racially. There are many Jews who are not religious, but even those Jews, even Judaism itself has a tremendous element within it that is racist, but not even religious. In fact, there are open atheists allowed to even lead Jewish synagogues. There are rabbis who say they don't even believe in God. That is unthinkable in another religion. That's unthinkable, say, in the Islamic religion or the Christian religion, to have a leader of that religion saying that they don't believe in God, right? Because fundamentally, even Judaism itself is a racial ideology, even though all Jews are not necessarily of the Jewish religion. But even non-religious, to a great extent, Israel, allows the Jewish religion to have a lot of control over policy because they know the Jewish religion, regardless of their beliefs about God, whether it conforms to their own. The Jewish religion maintains the Jewish bloodline. The Jewish religion maintains it. And Israel is overwhelmingly not Ashkenazi. The latest figures are about 60% of Israel being Sephardim or being what they call Mezari. And they're even going to the idea that the Jews of the world are what they call Mezari, whether they're Spanish Jews, which is where the Sephardim characteristic comes from, or whether they're Italian Jews, or whether they're Oriental Jews, meaning the Middle Eastern Jews, or whether they're Ashkenazi Jews. They're using Mezari as their title. And Jewish organizations in America have many, many Sephardic Jews in them, as well as Ashkenazi Jews. And in Israel itself, the Sephardic Jews are reproducing at the fastest rate. Even in America, some of the Sephardic elements have the fastest reproduction rates of all Jews. And they are becoming more radicalized with each generation. So this program, that's my introduction. But I want to go, and we've been discussing this. I think it's a very important point to say that the Jews, the enemy, the people destroying us, are not Khazars. They're not simply Ashkenazi. They are the Jewish establishment, the Jewish racial drive, the Jewish tribalist racism, the ultimate racist on the planet. And so I want to bring on Dr. Kevin MacDonald, who's done enormous research on the entire history of the Jewish people, especially in Europe. And he can help, I think, give us, that's Mizrahi is how they pronounce it. There's different pronunciations, but Mizrahi is how they pronounce this element of Jews, which are definitely not Ashkenazi. These are Jews that lived in the Roman Empire hundreds of years before the Ashkenazis ever existed, before even before any so-called Khazar conversion, which I think is basically mythos. There may have been some degree of it, but to think that these became the bulk of the Jewish people to me is ludicrous. It has no genetic science to it. And I'm going to bring on Dr. MacDonald early on my program today because we want to have a thorough discussion of this issue. And later in the show, we might also discuss the Trump phenomenon and some of the impact that's had. Dr. MacDonald, I want to welcome you to the show, and I think it's so important that we have a scientist, a psychologist, and also a person who studied Jewish history in Europe as much as any living person on earth, I believe, other than some Jews. It's really great to have you on the program because you've read Jewish literature, you've read Jewish material, and I really want to share some of your thoughts on this whole Khazar theory and why maybe that the Jewish establishment or Jews like Koestler and other subset of Jews have promoted this theory to the Gentile world. As kind of, I think it's a divide and conquer strategy, whereas among the Jews, the Khazar theory is not accepted whatsoever, but they do promote it for Gentiles, and I think there's a reason for it. So, Dr. MacDonald, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. I've just been looking at your article about Jewish population genetics. It's a very good review. I mean, I've never seen so many studies all in one place. It's very good.
Well, I'd love for you to publish it in Occidental Quarterly, if you would. If you'd think about that, you're welcome to edit it in any way you like. But I think this is an important issue because I believe the Khazar theory, my opinion is the Khazar theory is a very divisive force because every day I get letters from people saying the real Jews are good. It's those damn Khazars and it's those damn Ashkenazi Jews, when the truth is Jewry has been in a war against European mankind since the Roman times, the Greek times even. And I think this is a way for people not to have a clear understanding of the Jewish race. And the Khazar theory has been used to undermine the idea that the Jews are a race. In fact, the same people who promote that are these ethnic Jews who look very Jewish, like Eliak and also even Kussler. We've got that Jewish look, the Jewish nose, the Jewish nasal feature, the Jewish head structure. And yet they're telling us every day, Jews aren't a race. So basically the Jews are only a problem of ideology or religion. And if somehow we can get these Jews to be on our side, which, of course, I don't think we'll do.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I completely agree with you. This Khazar theory has been used by people who fundamentally don't understand population genetics or Jewish culture, really. I mean, Jewish culture is very Middle Eastern in every way. The fact that they set up these barriers. I mean, it's very common in the Middle East. That's one of the problems that we have in the Middle East. There are all these separate groups. They're very shut off from each other. They're married within themselves. And that's what, you know, when Jews came to Europe, that's the way they continued their ways. Very much of a Middle Eastern culture. But I completely agree with the population genetic evidence. Jews do constitute a discrete genetically. They are related to each other very significantly. They are a Middle Eastern group. There's no question in my mind.
So I've come to believe that the Ashkenazi hypothesis, that the Ashkenazi is the problem, not Sephardic. We look in Israel, for instance, the Sephardic populations are just as anti-European. In fact, maybe even more so in some ways than even some of the Ashkenazis who tend to be more liberal. And even though they really fundamentally are racist at their core, Jewish supremacists. For instance, the chief rabbi, the biggest, most influential rabbi of Israel is not the Ashkenazi rabbi, but it's the Sephardic rabbi. And that's where most of the religious Jews study. And that, of course, is Rabbi Yosef, who's one of the most racist rabbis, the most evil people, hating European mankind and saying the Jews are the real rulers of the world. And all, in fact, all life, all humanity is only meant to serve Jews. What are your thoughts on the relationship between Ashkenazi and Sephardim in terms of the world?
Well, I think there have been, you know, historical differences. In Europe at times there were, you know, sort of conflicts when the Sephardic Jews started emigrating up north, and they certainly viewed themselves as a superior group. Although actually in the long run, it seemed that they were not anywhere near as successful as the Ashkenazi. But the fact that they are related and have a lot of exactly the same attitudes about outgroups and so on, the same tendency to marry within the group. This is a genetic. These are genetic strategies. To some extent, they have remained separate from each other, but you know, all these studies show that they're Sephardic and Ashkenazi are closely related to each other. So, I really don't, you know, I don't grasp. In fact, you know, one thing I wonder is who's really trying to push this now. I mean, I know Kostler pushed it. For his own reasons, he did not want to see Jews as, you know, having a some kind of connection to the Middle East. He was a communist and all that. But who's pushing this today? It seems like most of the people that are pushing it are people on our side. For some reason, don't want to see Jews as they are, you know, as a Middle Eastern group. I don't really understand their motives, actually.
Well, genetically, isn't the genetic record pretty clear that that Jews definitely, if you look at the core genetics, they have a lot of similarity with Semites. Yet at the same time, they definitely have a different genetic signature than Semites, and that's because of the fact they've been separate from the other Semites for thousands of years, right. And they've had a very endogamous breeding pattern and a culture and a religion that accentuated what we call the Jewish stereotype or the Jewish both physical traits and, of course, the Jewish mindset. And you are a scientist. You do believe that we inherit not only our physical characteristics, but also our a lot of our what we call personality traits, whether it be aggressiveness, altruism, or selfishness, ethnocentrism, that these have incredible genetic components, and that Judaism itself and the Jewish community in Europe accentuated and promoted these genetic components. Do you agree with that? And what are your thoughts on?
Yes, absolutely. All the data in behavior genetics show that pretty much all our psychological traits. It's hard to find any psychological trait that doesn't have, is not influenced by genetic differences. And so personality is certainly no exception, intelligence no exception. So all these things have been under selection in Jewish communities, and in particular ethnocentrism. In other words, Jews that were not particularly ethnocentric, that did not want to marry within the group, or were too attracted to the outside culture, they were gone a long time ago, and they did not leave their genes within the Jewish gene pool. And
so, suggesting that Jews, for instance, living among Europe, among a lot of beautiful Europeans, that those Jews who are more attracted to the European aesthetic and who were more attracted to the European mindset, like, for instance, with the conflict in the Middle East with the Greeks, when the radical Jews, the Maccabees, slaughtered the Jews who liked the Greek way of thinking, that this process over 3,000 years, this is what's created the Jewish mentality, both on a cultural level, a religious level, and on a genetic level.
Yes, exactly. And I think your example of the Maccabees in the Greek times is very relevant. There were certainly Jews that were attracted to Greek culture, but those Jews were eventually expelled from the community. They were not part of the Jewish community going forward from the ancient world. And there's been repeated kind of bottlenecks there, where the most ethnocentric, the most fundamentally hostile towards outsiders people have reconstituted the Jewish community, and that has left its mark. The result now is you have a group that's incredibly adept at ethnic networking, that has these very deep Jewish connections, and they promote each other and all that. It just comes naturally. They're hardly aware of it, I think, sometimes.
That's a good example.
Yeah, so I think that ethnocentrism is really the key to everything. Without it, the IQ or whatever other traits you want to talk about aren't really important. Because what is important is that they've stayed together. And
is there racism, right?
Yeah, it's really fundamentally racism. Okay.
Now, let me ask you another question. This is interesting, too. And it's important for our people, our European people, to understand this. Now, hundreds and hundreds of years before any alleged Khazar conversion, look at the conflict we should share with our listeners. The conflict, for instance, between the Jews and the Greeks. We know that the Greeks were part and parcel, the core of Western European genes in terms of ethnicity, in terms of culture, in terms of values, and the same thing's true of the Romans. So let's think about that for a second and point out that the and this was hundreds of years before, because the Jews considered themselves absolutely at war with the primary European influences of the world, which was the Greeks and the Romans. In fact, the name Gentile actually comes from the word gens, meaning the Roman families, and that's what they later transported to the hatred of all humanity. The Jewish hatred of the absolute misanthropy, the hatred of mankind, really began and was strongly encapsulated in their hatred of the Romans, the gens, the Roman families, which it comes from the Roman word gens, Gentile. And that's what later they used. So their hatred of Europeans goes way, way, way earlier than any sort of Khazar Empire translation.
Oh, absolutely. You still see Jews, very much talking about or thinking about the fact that the Romans destroyed the temple, that sort of thing. There were huge wars between the Jews and the Romans, three of them, I think.
And ironically, isn't it ironic that some people who promote this theory that it's just the Khazars and the Ashkenazi, they themselves talk about the evil Talmud. They talk about the Jewish leadership causing the crucifixion of Christ, who, by the way, whatever we know about his lineage, of course, the Jews claim he wasn't a true Jewish lineage. But whatever we know that his doctrine that he preached was completely opposite to the Jewish mindset, wasn't it?
It was, and the reality is that Western peoples in general have not set up huge barriers between themselves and other people. I've been studying early European history, the Goths and the Romans when they had the invasions of the Germanic tribes. They did not set up big barriers between themselves and other people the way Jews always have. Whenever they've gone into Europe or anywhere, they've had their own communities, they've kept outsiders out, they've kept up these barriers for centuries. Whereas in Europe, they started out having some barriers, but pretty quickly they stopped, they started intermarrying, and the barriers came down. That's very European, as part of our sort of individualistic heritage. But with Jews, it's just the opposite, and it's always been that way. From Roman times, Greek times, into the European Middle Ages, and into the modern era. I mean, it's never changed.
Well, it's interesting, too, even Christianity. I kind of believe that the reason why the Christian faith was so adopted and was Europeans so readily took to it was the idea. It was almost like a European mythos. The idea, for instance, of a hero coming along who literally sacrificed his own life for the good of the community. That is a very European idea, isn't it? The great leader who risks all, who gives all. For the benefit of his people. And maybe that's part of it, and that's very, very different, again, to the Jewish ideology.
Yeah, so that is, it's a good point. There is this idea of the hero in European literature, going back to the Indo-European strand of European culture. The idea of the hero who is a leader and will if something goes wrong, he will give his life, gladly for that sort of thing, yeah.
Well, that's our swan song for the break. This is the bottom hour. Remember, folks, we don't have another break in the show, so we're going to another half an hour. And when we come back, we're going to discuss some of Dr. McDonald's enormous research into Jewish literature and how the huge Jewish communities that existed in Central Europe and Eastern Europe, how they grew out of what was the area like in Poland and also the Pale of Settlement, which existed from the center of Europe and expanded outward, and how the Ashkenazi developed even an entire language called Yiddish, which is just like a perfect match or perfect mixture of Hebrew with German. And they share so many German words and so many German terms. Back in a moment, and we'll discuss this whole issue further and deeply for your fascinating interest, because I'm fascinated by this. Back in a minute, folks.
Keep on looking.
Yes, this is David Duke, and we've got a great show going. I'm getting a ton of emails right now, and if you ever want to contact me during the show, you can go to davidduke.com and go directly to the emails, how you can contact David Duke, and I usually take a look. I scan those every day, sometimes a couple times a day, and you're welcome to write me directly and have thoughts and questions, and I'm certainly able to entertain questions for Dr. McDonald. I have a number of issues, Dr. McDonald, before we go into the core, the rise of the Ashkenazi Jews and how they came out of Central Europe with the population explosion, which I really want you to get into, and their structure, because you've read so many Jewish histories. Before we do that, we've had a couple of people talk about the fact, and I have one person saying, whatever the claimed lineage of Jesus Christ, whether he was a Jewish lineage, even though the Jews say he wasn't, whatever his lineage, that his entire lesson, his entire teaching was completely opposite of the basic Jewish mindset in terms of kindness, forgiveness, love, reconciliation, and that kind of thing. What are some? Could you give us some more of your thoughts on that? And do you think that had a big role in terms of the fact that Christianity became so such a powerful force in Europe?
Well, I certainly agree with the idea that Christianity and Judaism have absolutely opposite sort of ethics. There's no question about that. I'm really struggling with the idea, I'm trying to write a book now about European origins, and one of the most difficult questions, which I haven't really decided what I want to think about it, is what is the influence of Christianity? I mean, you have these indigenous European cultures And they certainly had their own sense of ethics and so on. Indo-European culture is in a lot of ways very different from Christianity. And yet they're, you know, Christianity probably had an influence. And some, you know, some people on our side think that Christianity was a really bad influence on European culture generally, because you had this Indo-European culture which is very militarized, very aggressive, very hierarchical and dominant, and so on. And it was replaced ultimately by Christianity. And, you know, in the long run, you might argue that has been a disaster. But, you know, it's very hard to separate out ethnic tendencies, religious tendencies, ideological tendencies. It's a huge intellectual puzzle for me, and I don't really want to say that I have a strong view about that at this point.
That's interesting. You know, a lot of I hear from a lot of people, and you know, I think one of the reasons why the idea that the Jews of the Old Testament are not the Jews of today and so forth, they weren't really the Jews, or just some sort of infiltration. I believe they're very, you know, very good people, and many of them, I know a lot of them, they're very, very anti-Jewish. That is, they're against the Jewish power structure, and I consider them our allies in the fight. But I think that they have the strong a lot of people, and this is one thing the Zionists have done, they get this identification. A lot of people have identification with the Jews of the Old Testament. And they just don't want to believe that these are the same people responsible for so much of the evil and the anti-Christian evil in the world. Right. So, and also there are people that want to defend themselves from accusations by anti-Semitism by saying the Jews aren't at core Semites, even though the Jews definitely are distinct from Semites. So what is your thought on that?
Well, I understand, you know, why Christians would be, you know, hesitant to reject the Old Testament. You know, it is part of the Christian canon and everything. But, you know, from my point of view, there's a huge break there. And, you know, actually, one of my other books, The Separation of Discontents, I have a chapter on the origins of Christianity in the Roman Empire. And my view is that Christianity actually developed as an anti-Jewish strategy, you know, sort of a contra-strategy to Jews that were becoming very powerful. You know, when Jews started out, like in the first century, the Jews were not very powerful. They had these wars and the Romans crushed them and everything. But as time went on, by the fourth century, Jews became very powerful. They were the main slave traders. They dominated huge areas of the economy.
Many of the bankers of Rome, correct?
I mean, that's the bankers. Yeah. You know, so it was like, you know, the typical Jewish story, where Jews gradually by the fourth century became very powerful, and they started oppressing people, as usual. And so the Christianity then became this anti-Jewish ideology. And Christians often, you know, part of that ideology was that Jews were obsessed with you know, what they called carnality. They were concerned about you know, actual biological descent, and they criticized them for that. And they say, you know, that's you know, not the, you know, God could not have just restricted his covenant just to these people that are identical by descent and descended from each other and so on. It had to go for everyone and so on. And so,
especially since Europeans understood that they weren't the same people. Their ancestors came from Europe, not from the Middle East. Their ancestors were European, right?
Right. And so they developed this ideology, was Jews killed Jesus. That was a central idea that they had at that time. You know, and that was part of anti-Semitism as it developed in the very early Middle Ages, that Jews you know, had rejected Jesus, and that so it what happened then after this developed in the fourth century is that the Jewish status really went downhill fast. You know, there are all these laws against Jews owning slaves and various laws that they couldn't do other economic things and so on.
Yeah, they couldn't own Gentile slaves, for instance, which was
big issue. They couldn't participate in the government anymore. They couldn't, you know, have a job with the government. So it was a huge sea change, you know, in anti-Jewish attitudes, beginning in the fourth century and then extending. And then into the Middle Ages, you know, a lot of that early history was forgotten, but, you know, that theology remained. And it's fascinating. If you look at some of the documents of the Catholic Church in the early 20th century, just, you know, completely reiterating those points from the 4th century about attitudes towards Jews as this alien group that are hostile towards Christians, and just a completely different mindset than we're seeing now, especially since Vatican II.
Let's move on. And of course, we know that the Jews have been trying to gain control over the church. I read an article in the 60s where the name of the article was a Look magazine article, and it was, the title of it was "How the Jews Changed Catholic Thinking," and it was given to me by actually a Catholic priest.
Yeah.
That I met as a young man, and a very powerful article. And I think that conflict is still going in the Catholic Church and the Christian Church at large, because the Jews have controlled the general culture. So they've basically infiltrated and infected the thinking of many so-called Christians. Let's go directly into the Khazar theory, some of the nuts and bolts of it, which I think are very, very important. The genetic evidence is they can literally trace the rise of the Ashkenazi element to an overwhelming Jewish Semitic element that intermixed to a small degree, to a limited degree, either somewhere around 15%, with some intermarriages between some Jewish males and some German, Northern European Gentiles. And this is where the theories show that where the Ashkenazi Jews tend to be. And they're not all lighter, because, again, they share this same Jewish Semitic expression. But they tend to be lighter. This is where they've got the blonde Jews and some of the blue-eyed Jews, even though most even Ashkenazis are not necessarily like that. And the evidence is, for instance, a good example is in your books, and I've written about this too, and you've done a lot of research on it. There was a huge, when the Jews came into Europe and the Ashkenazi Jews grew up, there was a huge Jewish population explosion that existed in what is parts of Germany, part of Poland, all the way to the Pale of Settlement. And if you look at Jewish history, just the creation of synagogues, Jewish communities, for instance, Poland, up until the Second World War, was the biggest per capita Jewish percentage of any European nation in the world. Now, this itself mitigates against the idea that somehow the Khazars converted to Christianity, then swept across Russia and Eastern Europe, and then into Germany and into Europe. The evidence is very clear that very old Jews who were original Jews, migrated a bit into Northern Europe, into what's now Germany, mixed with some Gentiles. They still retain their overwhelming Jewish, ethnology of their overwhelming Jewish genetic heritage. And then they had a huge population explosion. What can you tell our listeners about that aspect?
Yeah, I think the one aspect of this is that Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazi Jews are related to each other. But, you know, I don't think anyone disputes the idea that Sephardic Jews, you know, are there, have been there, were there in Spain from Roman times.
And Italy and Greece, and also up into Germany, because they went with the Roman Empire, didn't they?
And then Jews from Rome and you know, went up into northern Italy, went up the Rhine into Germany, and so on. That's the origin of the Ashkenazi Jews. And they remained separate enough from the Jews in Spain to be a separate group. I completely accept that, and it fits with the modern population genetic evidence. I don't see any problem at all with that. And there was a huge population explosion in the 19th century in Eastern Europe. And that's one of the most fascinating things, because Jews, have tended to be sort of the, sort of elite and not really have huge families and so on. But in the 19th century, a subset of Jews just really developed, very fundamentalist, and developed this, high fertility kind of thing, where they were having, huge numbers of children, and even though they were poor, they had overshot their economic niche. You know, there's only so much room for, middlemen and businessmen, and
that's so true.
And they just completely overshot it. They dominated the economy. There was huge anti-Semitism because they were so economically dominant, but they still kept churning out way more children than they could absorb into their economic niche.
And the migration went two areas, right? Some of it went to the even further west, right?
Yeah.
toward France, toward, but even though there was a very big Sephardic element, obviously, in Holland, which was part of the Spanish Empire, and many Jews came to Holland from the Sephardic element, and there, and many went to actually to England from some of that, from the Roman Empire, but they also expanded to the east, and there's a lot of evidence if you look, if you trace. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I want to get, because you're better, more of authority on this aspect than certainly I am, even though I've read a lot of Jewish histories as you have. You can actually trace the rise of these huge Jewish communities, for instance, in what is now Poland. And you can actually see with the histories of the Jews, their expansion eastward, not coming from the east to the west, right, as they would if they were coming from Khazars, but from Central Europe, speaking German, Hebrew dialect, Yiddish, and expanding. And you see much earlier Jewish, big Jewish communities. Early in the earliest days in Central Europe, then you see, for instance, in Russia, which actually came later, and all the way down even to what's today's Ukraine. So the flow really went from west to east, didn't it? And what's your evidence for that?
Yeah, that's the standard historical account, that if you look at the history of Jews in Poland, they started out, you know, with a very small Jewish population in the early Middle Ages, which had come from Germany. They spoke Yiddish and had a typical culture of German Jews. So that is a standard story. I see no reason to reject it. It seems to fit. And then once they got into Poland, they did, you know, they occupied their usual economic niches, made alliances with the nobility, became a state, you know, tax collectors and estate managers and so on. And gradually their population developed, and expanded hugely. And when that happened, then they had to change their economic profile. And you started seeing, you know, tavern owners and people, you know, Jews being in the more rural areas rather than just in the cities. It eventually developed where there was huge numbers of very poor Jews in the 19th century, and they then expanded out, and that was the basis of the Jewish population in America, basically from Eastern Europe, from that excess
mass immigration from them. That's why there is a heavily Ashkenazi version of it. A lot of it was from Russia, by the way.
Yeah.
Because of the persecutions against Jews in Russia. But isn't it interesting, again, this is another fascinating point of view. If you look at it now, the Khazar Empire theory would suggest that Jews came from the east, like this Turco people, so kind of a pastoral people, which doesn't really make much sense either, because the Jews have always been urban historically. But one thing about the Jews that you and I can both admit is that they have always been scholars, they've always been legitimate, and they always have kept very, very accurate histories of their people and their communities and their establishments. And if the Jews really were coming from Khazars, if that's where what happened, the Khazars swept in, then why in the world would the oldest Jewish communities of the Ashkenazi be in the far, far west, right? And like Poland, Central Europe, and the most recent Jewish communities were actually later. The if you look at the actual histories of Jewish communities in what's Belarus, Russia, the Baltic, and all of the Russian Empire, which stretched all the way down to Ukraine, even Ukraine, those huge Jewish communities, they came after the big communities in Central Europe. So that suggests, again, a Eastern migration of Jews from Central Europe, mixture of Jews with the Northern Europeans, rather than a Khazar sweeping into Europe.
Yes, absolutely. I would agree with that.
Okay, other questions. There's so many different questions around. Let's just talk about the reason why that Jews like Koestler. Now, Koestler actually admitted, his main Jewish biographer, other biographers, he himself went in Jewish publications and said, you know, to the Jewish audience, that the reason I'm supporting this is because this theory, the Khazar theory, and the ideas that Jews are not a race will help the Jews, because he believed that a lot of Jewish anti-Semitism or Jewish opposition came from the idea, clear gospel idea, that the Jews, this racial Jews, crucified Christ. And by saying that Jews had no lineage to the ones that crucified Christ, they still followed the Old Testament, which many Christians identified with, that this would lessen anti-Semitism or lessen any opposition to Jews. Isn't that an interesting concept? And that provides me with an idea of why Jews have been motivated to promote the Khazar theory among Gentiles.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting also from the standpoint that so much of Jewish intellectual work is rationalizing, you know, coming up with these ideologies that they think will benefit Jews. And this is just another one, you know, where this guy comes up with an idea that he thinks will help Jews because it, you know, you don't have the connection to the Christ killers. But it's the same sort of thing as the Frankfurt School coming up with ideologies that promote Jewish interests and have result in positive interpretations of Judaism and so on, which aren't necessarily true at all. They just make these things up and then promulgate them. And if you get a significant number of, you know, Harvard professors that agree with it, then it becomes some kind of a dogma. I mean, that's sort of the way the world works.
And isn't it ironical that, a lot of very strong anti-Jews who recognize the evil of the Talmud, who recognize the Jewish role in the crucifixion of Christ, who recognize the long Jewish history of anti-European ideology and murder and massacre, such, even Gibbon writes about this in The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, about Jewish massacres against Greeks and Syrians and, you know, lots of other peoples. Even their Hanukkah is a celebration of massacre of Greeks. Their tremendous hatred for the Romans. Isn't it ironic that people would fall into the endorse this principle or this idea of Koestler and these other Jews, an idea basically really promoted by an open Jewish communist who was a big supporter of the State of Israel, Jewish supremacism for the Gentiles. It's really ironic. It reminds me of Jared Diamond, you know, the geneticist who says, thank God for genetics because now we can find out who the real Jews are, yet at the same time to the Gentiles he preaches that there's no such thing as race, and then he preaches to the Jews that, well, we now know the Jews are a race, that they're identifiable people. Isn't that ironic, this incredible hypocrisy?
Yeah, that's another thing that keeps recurring. You know, if it's beneficial for Jews to think of themselves as an ethnic group, then they will do that. If it's beneficial to think of themselves as a religion, then they will say that. And anybody who denies it will then be an anti-Semite. But, for example, in Australia, they have laws that are written from the standpoint of ethnicity as being relevant. So then these Jewish organizations claim they're an ethnic group. But at other times and places, like in America or the 20th century, we're a religion. We're nothing to do with ethnicity. And that's sort of the ideology that they promulgate. Well, and then if you disagree with it, you become an anti-Semite and they hassle you and so on. But these ideologies are fungible. Whatever works is their motto. They don't have any principles. You know, truth doesn't matter at all. It's whatever you can get away with, really.
Hang on with me after the show, Kevin, because I'd really like to talk to you about some of these issues as well and get some more of your thoughts. We have a limited time in this hour. I find it also interesting that one of the biggest promoters of the Khazar theory in America and the Western world was a Jew by the name of Benjamin Friedman, who we must say was a very strong opponent of the power of Jewry in America, talking about the Jewish bankers, the Rothschilds, and all the rest of it, Benjamin Friedman. But I can understand, that I'm not saying it was necessarily conspiratorial on his part, but he was one of the biggest popularizers of this theory. But I can understand why a Jewish person of the Jewish race, of the Jewish heritage, would want to make out like, well, it's not the Jewish race that's the problem. It's just, in fact, the Jews don't even know the race of Jesus. And so, you know, Jews aren't the enemy, and Jews can be like me. And basically, it's a way of affirming himself and saying that he's not a real threat, even though he's a Jew who is supposedly against the Jews. What do you think about that concept?
That's the sort of idea that whatever works, you know, and so they will develop ideologies in which Jews are not very different. I mean, one of the big pushes in among Jewish activist organizations was to have the idea that there are three basic religions in the United States: Catholicism, Protestantism, and Judaism. Is that we're one of the three religions, and to get people to think of Judaism simply another religion.
Judeo-Christianity, right?
Different beliefs. That's all. That's the only difference.
That's right. Now, one last thing, and we're almost to the end of the hour, but this is important to talk about. I believe, and I think you believe it as well, that the underbelly the easiest way to, I think, expose the Jewish problem, against them with the destruction of our race, because they are behind the annihilation of the European people, is to show that they are motivated by Jewish racism, Jewish tribalism. So obviously, these Khazar theories have been used to say to people that Jews are not a race. In fact, the Khazars, who were totally unrelated to the original Jews genetically, are the biggest propagators of Judaism. And I think because of the fact that the Jews have pushed this idea of exploitive racism and oppressive racism, murderous racism, which Europeans really, I don't think, hold to, actually, as being European, I think that exposing Jews as the ultimate racist is actually the most powerful thing we can do, and it's an idea that they don't want. They don't want the idea they're a race. Even Greenblatt of the ADL came out and said Ted Nugent is evil because the Jews are just a religion, and how can you say that these Jewish people are behind the gun control? Your thoughts?
Exactly. You know, I recall one of my colleagues, a Jewish colleague back in when I was teaching, he really was upset when he read that I had described Jews as hyper ethnocentric. That's the thing that really bothered him, you know, and because he didn't want to see Jews as ethnocentric. And I think that's what we're trying to say. We're saying that Jews are extremely ethnocentric. They are the racist ones. They are way more racist than anybody else. They're far more concerned about their you know, biological lineage. Keeping it pure and so on than anybody.
So, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm just almost out of time. One last thought with you. So the Jews have created the idea that racism is the ultimate sin, the ultimate evil. And isn't this the easiest thing we can do, is prove the ultimate racism, the ultimate supremacism, the ultimate privilege is Jewish racism, Jewish privilege, Jewish ultimate supremacism. And by not understanding and promoting the idea of the Jewish race, the Jewish group, we're taking the biggest weapon we have out of our hands to expose the Jewish problem.
Yes, I do think that's one thing. That's why I
keep talking. We got a minute or so before the commercial. Go ahead.
Well, I think, again, I agree that is something we have to emphasize, that although these people act as if they are the least racist people in the world and how wonderful they are, you know, it's easy to expose that as a lie. And I think Israel is making that obvious to everyone.
I think so. And I think that's the greatest weapon in our hands. So that's why I think, you know, understanding the Khazar theory and the whole Ashkenazi as being the problem,
yeah,
so important that we discuss this. Thank you so much, Doctor. And please hang on, because I'd like to talk to you for a minute after the show. Thanks, folks. I mean, what an amazing show. This is a show I hope everybody shares. Any last quick words, sir?
No, and I have looked at your paper, and I'm very interested in publishing Occidental Quarterly. It's very,
that would be great. Any way you want to edit it or enhance it, you're very welcome to do so. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody. This is a very seminal issue, a vital issue to our cause, a vital issue to our understanding. If we're going to overcome these Jewish supremacists who are literally wiping our people, who are the force behind destroying our people from the face of the earth. Love you all. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, keep thinking free. Bye-bye now.
6,000 videos of my appearances. Thank you.